Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The swift and inglorious fall of Saddam Hussein has been an earthquake of such magnitude in the Arab world that Arabs are still struggling to grasp its meaning. Is it neo-imperialism? Is it an opening to Islamic revolution? Might it just indeed be a path to Arab democracy? Tonight on Point, direct from Cairo, Arab hopes and Arab fears after the war. We begin in Iraq, where for a second day, ugly standoffs between U.S. troops and local residents in the northern city of Mosul have left Iraqis dead. On Tuesday, 10 or more Iraqis were reported killed in an angry crowd outside the governor's office. Today, three more residents were killed near an open market where locals said American weapons opened up. David Filipov is a correspondent for the Boston Globe. I asked him to describe the underlying tension in Mosul behind the recent violence.
Well, the underlying tension is that there are a lot of different forces in the city. There are people who are just opposed to the American control of Mosul. There are elements of Fedayeen Saddam running around. There are Kurdish people. There are Arabs who have long-standing mistrust of each other. And then there are the U.S. troops, whose orders, of course, are that when they take fire, they fire back. And that is a very volatile mixture right now.
How exactly did these two incidents develop? Was it a similar dynamic each time?
Well, the first one took place when there was a demonstration outside the government building in Mosul where the U.S. had tried to secure the building. There are different conflicting accounts on why the crowd got angry, but one of them is that the U.S. troops had raised an American flag. The U.S. troops in Mosul very consciously drive around with large American flags, partly to identify themselves, but also to let everyone know the Americans are here. In response to that, a lot of Iraqis, especially in Arab neighborhoods, have start carrying around big Iraqi flags. So there's clearly some tension going on there. But in any case, a large crowd gathered. According to some accounts, the crowd started throwing things at the Marines, and the Marines fired into the air. In response, someone fired back at them, say the Marines, and that's how the shooting started.
And then today we have a shooting in an open market in Mosul. What do you know about that?
I wasn't actually at the shooting when it happened, but the reports I've heard is that there was an attempt to loot the central bank or some other building near the central bank. Iraqi police, who are now working with American police, says the reformed Iraqi police department is working along with coalition troops to try to keep order in the city. The Iraqi police fired in the air to warn the looters away. The American troops heard the firing and fired in that direction, and that set off one of those crossfires that result when people start firing guns in a city.
What are the Americans saying about how they hope to get out of this cycle of urban clashes, urban violence, and closer to something like order?
Well, the Americans are saying that slowly by slowly, order is returning to the city. And in a way, that's true. The first 2 days after Mosul fell, there was always gunfire heard in the city. Residents were walking around. They'd set up blockades to stop looters and shooting at anyone that moved, basically. Some of the main city streets were free fire zones, and it was a very frightening place to be. A city with lots of gunfire is very confusing because you never know where exactly the gunfire is coming from. And that has, to a great degree, subsided. The problem is something different, which is that the presence of Americans obviously rankles some of the people in Mosul. Mosul is a traditional Sunni Arab Muslim center. It's a well-off place. They've considered themselves to be the heart of the Iraqi nation for quite some time, and a lot of people there are opposed to the idea that Americans are now running the show. So while the Americans say things are under control or getting slowly under control and the government is coming back, there are certainly a lot of people there who are against the American presence.
So the concern is not just kind of disorderly lawlessness, but something like a real, if chaotic, armed opposition. Does that suggest there may have to be some kind of military crackdown, tight rule on Mosul?
I think that it's a problem that's a little more complicated than something that you could eradicate by military means. When I saw the celebrations, or lack thereof, in Mosul after the city was captured or liberated, however you want to put it, the first thing I asked people is, why aren't people more happy? And it turns out that people in Mosul, although they also hated living under Saddam, they immediately went straight, without celebrating for a second, to the protest of the presence of Americans. Clearly, there's something about the Americans driving around with American flags and with a strong military presence, that makes people there very upset. And so further military crackdown doesn't look like it's going to make these tensions go away. The problem is that when you add to that the fact that there are, let's call them peaceful civilians who are very angry, you add to that elements of the armed opposition, the armed pro-Hussein opposition, then it becomes difficult to distinguish, especially for the Americans, when someone's pelting them with rocks, as demonstrators often do when demonstrations go wrong, and the Americans think that they're being shot at, as the Fedayeen Saddams tend to do, then it becomes very difficult for the Americans to distinguish who are the people expressing their democratic right to protest and who are the enemy.
Military crackdown doesn't sound attractive at all, but I read that the head of U.S. Special Forces there is ordering all the Kurdish Peshmerga forces out by sundown tomorrow. It sounds like the locals would like U.S. forces to leave. If all these forces leave, who does keep order?
Well, the U.S. won't leave. That's pretty clear. They've made that certain. Today there were a lot of helicopters flying over the city. That sort of seems to be a statement to me anyway, that if the American troops aren't on every street corner, then we're in the skies and we can see you. The Kurdish forces have been ordered out of the west part of the city, which is predominantly Arab, because their presence was causing a lot of tension among Arab residents there. They've moved into the Kurdish part of the city on the east bank of the Tigris River and probably will leave, because that was part of the deal with the Kurds, that they would not occupy this city as they were not supposed to occupy the other major northern Iraqi city, Kirkuk. But ultimately, Americans are there to stay until the Iraqis can put together a government that can keep order.
Clearly a very tough situation. David Filipov, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
David Filipov is a correspondent for the Boston Globe. He spoke with us from Erbil, Iraq, and was in the city of Mosul earlier today. Beyond the borders of Iraq, the Arab world watches in rapt fascination, some horror and some hope, as the U.S. war in Iraq turns now to nation building. To many, the whole project is a deep offense and insult. To others, it is a stunningly high-stakes gamble on the reputation of the United States and the future of a region. If it works, if it lives up to Washington's highest rhetoric, a new model will stand in the place of tyranny. If it fails, if it slips into occupation, exploitation, extended chaos, it will stand as a refutation of American ideals and of moderate Arabs who may share those ideals. Tonight, we're turning to Cairo for a conversation with a prominent Egyptian playwright and with an American journalist who has devoted much of her life to bringing understanding of the Middle East to America. Joining me now from Cairo is Ali Salem, Egyptian playwright and writer for the Egyptian magazine Rose El Yusuf. Good evening and welcome, Ali Salem.
Good evening, sir.
Thanks for joining us. And from Cairo as well, in the same studio tonight, Genevieve Abdo, Boston Globe correspondent covering the Middle East and co-author of Answering Only to God, Faith and Freedom in 21st Century Iran. Good evening and welcome, Genevieve Abdo.
Good evening, Tom.
It's great to be with both of you. There is such a hunger in the United States today to understand beyond all the images pouring out of Iraq and the images out of the Arab world, really some of the texture and complexity of thinking and response to this very dramatic event in Iraq. Ali Salem, you have been a playwright who has paid some price for being open to new views in the Middle East, being open to trying to understand Israel. You have a reputation as something of a moderate there for which you've paid in the past. I'd like to start with you and just ask, from that perspective, how do you see what's unfolding here? Is this building, or might it build, Arab support for American ideals as Washington would like to have it, or is something else going on? What's your reaction?
I see this war as the last battle in the Second World War. This is a battle against what I call rosy thoughts of mass destruction started in the beginning of the last century, and Europe could get rid of them all, but they lingered in our region. Saddam Hussein and his school, his gang, were representing the last thoughts that relates to Nazi fascism. So I see it was not Al-Alamin, the last battle in our desert. This is the last battle in the Second World War. So I have hope. I have hope that this will enable us to achieve democracy in our region. When I talk about democracy, I'm not thinking of your democracy or the European democracy. At least I'm not ambitious to this extent. At least I don't want dictators in our region. And this is good. What happened made us feel mixed feelings. Yes, I was against Saddam, but I'm too against to be liberated by foreigners, finally. But I think that nowadays we can't see things as in the past. Here, now, it's one village, literally. Mm. It's one village. And the Americans, the English, suddenly discover that they are responsible for removing a dictator. Of course, they were defending themselves from potential dangers. I know it very well. And I know very well that generals do not go to wars to liberate the others. Liberation or liberties are not the target and were not the target of any war. But it could be byproduct for the war. This is what we are waiting for.
Genevieve Abdo, I want to turn to you as well. Ali Salem is we can hear, even in his first comments, the kind of mixture of hope and fear that has clearly been raised by everything that's gone on in recent weeks. You've been in Syria, you're in Egypt now, you've spent many years in Iran and know that part of the Middle East so well. What are you hearing, what are you seeing in response to what's gone on?
Well, I think that Ali just pinpointed the confusion that people across the region feel right now. And they don't really, of course, they never supported Saddam Hussein. Mm. But on the other hand, they really do not want the United States to interfere in the region. And even people who are adamantly against their governments, both in Syria and Egypt, they still prefer to have some sort of reform process that is spawned from within their own countries, no matter how long this might take. And, I mean, what people have been repeating to me over and over, you know, for the last month that I've been here is that they don't want this kind of change imposed upon them. They want to decide for themselves what type of government they should have and the kinds of reforms that should come about.
But at this point, Genevieve, it's a little late for that, isn't it? I mean, something has been imposed here.
Well, it's not too late in a country like Egypt. Mm-hmm. I mean, as far as we know, maybe there's some sort of secret plan in a way.
Oh, I don't mean that. I really don't mean that. But just looking at Iraq,
right.
a war has been imposed, a war of liberation, as Washington would put it. But nevertheless, a very large intervention from outside. Do ordinary people see some element of hopefulness in this? The press reporting that we hear from the Middle East seems absolutely dead set against it in its tone and tenor. Is there any other view?
There is some view among Islamists who are involved in moderate movements in the region that this could be an opportunity for them to try to gain political power that they've been shut out from in the past. So there is some hope among the Islamists that this could put pressure on governments to make some changes. And because in some of these countries the Islamists are very popular, they're hoping that if there is some sort of pluralistic system that results from the war in Iraq down the road, that they will benefit from this.
Ali Salem, is that where hope lies, that Islamists who would perhaps like to see Islamic republics across the region, are they the ones encouraged by what's happened in Iraq? Is there a liberal democratic movement that finds hope or encouragement here?
I think political Islamists find what happened as a threat to them. And I'm sure there will be no more in our region after what happened in Iraq, because the model itself, the role model, had been destroyed. So I can't see any future for them. So they were the first to discover that they are threatened I see no future for political Islam in our region.
We're going to have to come back and dig into that. Ali Salem, Genève Abdo, please stand by. We've got to take a short break. We're talking about the mood on the streets in the Arab world tonight with Egyptian playwright Ali Salem and Boston Globe Middle East correspondent Genève Abdo. We're not taking phone calls this hour because of the time difference, but you can join the conversation on the web at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're having an intimate conversation tonight with two guests in studio in Cairo, Egypt, Ali Salem, Egyptian playwright and writer for the Egyptian magazine Rose El Yusuf, and Genève Abdo, also with us tonight from Cairo, Boston Globe correspondent covering the Mideast and a longtime journalist in that region. We're trying to get a sense of how the dramatic events of the last month and more are going down around the Middle East, how they're being received, how they're sinking in, the war and now the early aftermath of war. We're fortunate to be with these two tonight, both of you. It's great to have you along. Ali Salem, you were saying just before the break that you saw in the toppling of Saddam Hussein's regime the end of what you called political Islam. But I thought I heard Genève Abdo saying she sees Islamists viewing what's happened as a potential opportunity to get out from under the thumb of authoritarian regimes. Genève, what's the distinction that's here?
Well, the distinction is that, of course, the moderate Islamists don't advocate force as an avenue to political change, whereas the people that are often put in the category of political Islam, they're violent groups. So the people I was talking about, really, are people in Egypt who have become part of a huge social movement who are Islamists and who want to be able to run in free elections in Egypt and gain a seat at the table of power in this country.
And Ali Salem, do you imagine that when Iraq comes to a democratic period, that it may be Islamists who may win, even in a country with such a secular history as Iraq? Could this become an Islamic republic?
No. Because the idea itself, they flourish, prosper, when the atmosphere itself is a dictatorship, a tyranny. But when you fix a system, set a system respecting the human rights, liberalism, economically and politically, they have nothing to do. Okay, let us have governments with Islamic background, but they will not be the same as they think. Nowadays, today or yesterday in Baghdad, the demonstration shouted, no to Saddam, no to the American, but Islam.
Yes, we saw this in Najaf.
That's good. That means simply they are afraid, because nowadays they are saying, they are shouting no to Saddam. Saddam has gone away. Mm-hmm. So they are afraid what's coming in the future, what they can imagine in the future, is frightening them. They know very well that there will not be in this region any form of despotism.
I have to ask you there, Ali Salem, you know, just a couple of weeks ago at the Al-Azhar University in Cairo, there was this fatwa issued advising Muslims to make jihad against invading American forces. And this from a university that has not been radical, that has been rather moderate in its posture. Is that changed by the fact that the war is over? Is it now open for debate? Is it possible that Shiites may push back against what's happened in Iraq simply because Americans, foreigners, are so deeply involved or have taken the lead?
The whole inhabitants of this region nowadays have digested the lesson. They understood the lesson. There will not be another dictatorship. They will not allow it. Nowadays in Iraq, they talk about a unified Iraq. They are talking about a country, and liberalism. But in regards to our clerics, don't expect any cleric to say anything but go for jihad. But our clerics nowadays, in particular, have discovered that those who they drove them to go to Baghdad, the Iraqi officials have taken from them their passports, their ID cards, any papers that prove their nationalities, and they left them and disappeared. And these miserable guys were wandering in the streets of Baghdad, and they went lastly to the foreign reporters in Palestine Hotel, begging them the help to go again to their countries.
To go home, to give up the jihad.
Yes, yes.
Jenny Abdo, jump in here with us. I hear Ali Salem saying that the lesson that will be taken, that is being taken from Iraq, is no more dictatorship, even what sounds quite hopeful, that an opening to a kind of liberal politics or liberalism with a capital L. How do you see that? At the same time, there's so much resentment. We heard, and you reported recently from Syria, Syrians just aghast at the fall of Saddam Hussein, appalled at the idea of more American power in their backyard. How do both these thoughts live at once?
Well, I think certainly people are tired of dictatorships, and that we didn't need a war in Iraq for them to become tired of dictatorships. I think that perhaps where I disagree with Ali is on what the outcome will be. And I think that, too, we could contrast Syria with Egypt to sort of project what might happen in the future. In Syria, people actually support the president, Bashar al-Assad. Mm-hmm. And the more the Americans threaten Syria, the more popular he becomes. And when I was in Syria, I asked many people, well, don't you want more rights in this country? Don't you want a free press? And they said, yes, but we have been living in this civilization for so many years, and we're not going to have a revolution against the government. And yes, it's a gradual process. In Egypt, the reverse has happened. In Egypt, anti-American sentiment has also become anti-President Mubarak sentiment. And on the streets, in the same breath that they chant against America, they also chant against President Mubarak. This is becoming quite dangerous for the government here because, of course, they don't want public opinion to be turned against the government. So you sort of have a reverse situation in Egypt. And this is why I made the point earlier that in Egypt, the most powerful opposition movement in Egypt today, that is the moderate Islamic movement. So this provides an opportunity for them to come in and fill a political vacuum that could develop, and I want to stress could because it hasn't happened yet, as a result of the war in Iraq.
And Ali Salem, if Geneva Abdo's correct, if there's an opening here for the moderate Islamic element, is that compatible with a future of representative democracy, of a future of political liberalism?
I have a problem with the word moderate Islam. I know them very well. And I know if you dig in the heart of any individual of them, they will find an extremist inside it. These things that they make in our streets, they are trying to blackmail the government to have something from it. But in our newspapers today, there were a meeting in the journalist syndicate. For the first time in years, I read about people talking about liberalism economically and politically. There were no Islamists, political Islamists wings in the meeting. This is very important. People nowadays started to see how deceptive is the revolutionary regime is. Nowadays, they are accusing Saddam Hussein that he conspired on the Iraqis and he delivered his capital. I think I'm not afraid of these trends now. Now I'm not afraid of them. Now I know because all these extremist thoughts started in the very beginning of the last century. The West could get rid of them in less than 10 years, but it have taken 70 years for the Russians. But nowadays, we are getting rid of these thoughts that include what you call the moderate Islamists.
And you're characterizing this as another kind of extremism, another kind of authoritarian urge. You know, Ali Salem, you have a unique history and background in Egypt. You were such a prominent playwright. You, in the mid-90s, took a very unusual step for a leading figure in the art scene in Egypt after Oslo, in reaching out to Israel, getting in your car without even telling your wife, driving to Israel, spending time there. You wrote a book, Journey to Israel, which simply by the act of going and observing and writing put you outside the pale of much of the arts community there. As I understand it, Egyptian intellectuals stopped shaking hands with you, stopped talking with you. You were kind of blacklisted for that. So we know that you personally have proven a kind of courageous openness to look at the other, to interact. Do you have fear that this may happen again, that in what I hear is your openness to a kind of message of political reform, you may once again end up ostracized by Egyptians saying, no, this is foreign intervention, this is neo-imperialism, we want no part of it?
No. Nowadays, they started talking about this deception of Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein expended the money of his people on the Arab media, mm-hmm. bribed them. And Saddam Hussein with his regime was the one who could deter the Egyptian-Israeli peace. In 1994, I went there to declare that this is the point, Oslo agreement. And I saw it, I still see it, a political miracle. For the first time, the two peoples acknowledge each other. The Palestinian mm-hmm. acknowledge the Israelis, and the Israelis acknowledge the Palestinian as a nation. And it was the first step to be built upon. And I don't consider myself failed in my mission or message. I can't, because after that, people started talking about peace. The regime, the Iraqi regime in our region, could hamper all efforts towards the Israeli-Palestinian peace.
Jenny Abdo, how about it? Saddam Hussein clearly had his finger in many pots, and without any doubt in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict with payments to suicide bombers' families and so on. Ali Salem presents a kind of a optimistic picture here, that with that factor removed, there's new opportunity for peacemaking and for openness to this new politics. Do you see it?
I think that it really depends upon what the Bush administration does about the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, certainly now that the war is over. And I think that the people that I've interviewed and spoken to in this last month, they've said that they're waiting. They're waiting to see what the response is going to be from the Bush administration. And if they concentrate once again on the peace process, then perhaps something positive could come of this. And perhaps, this terrible and violent struggle that's been going on, perhaps people will find some hope that it will end. But if they continue to ignore the process, I think that this will radicalize the region even more, because this is one of the great grievances among many people across the Middle East, is that the United States, as they see it at least, supports Israel in this conflict, and that the United States policies favor Israel and the Israeli position. So if the United States can prove otherwise, certainly after the war in Iraq and after there is so much anti-American sentiment in the region, if they can prove that they are genuinely interested in solving this conflict, then perhaps they can at least to some degree turn public opinion around.
And what about the example of what unfolds in Iraq itself, Ali Salem? You were quoted telling Tom Friedman, a columnist with the New York Times recently, that if there's an American general presiding over Iraq for long, it will be bad for us Arab liberals and for you, i.e. you, the United States. What are you looking for? What do Arabs need to see unfold in Iraq for it to be an attractive model, an example that other countries may actually find inspiration in?
Till now, I don't admit that this is an occupation. And I don't want it to be occupation, because occupation or colonialism generally related to another era. It's not our age. But I hope that with the most speed you have, let the Iraqis choose their government. And this is going to happen. peace is going to happen. I can see the sort of cooperation between policemen, Iraqi policemen, and the American soldiers in their patrols. I can see people going there to the Americans, asking them to work for Iraq. People are going to get rid of the traces of Saddam Hussein inside their minds. The man left them. They were stranded. They left them. They left them without any cover from any sort. They deceived them by their minister of information every day, telling people with a big smile that we have done so and so to the American. They are defeated. They are trapped inside their tanks.
And
suddenly, suddenly he disappeared with all the officials. Now, this will drive people here in Egypt to reconsider. This will motivate people to rethink and to study what happened.
Jenny Abdo, do you hear that reconsideration? Do you sense people sitting back and saying, wait a minute, I was against this, just on principle, foreigners coming with arms into the Middle East, but now that I've seen what's happened, I'm thinking twice, or not?
No, not at all. In fact, I'm hearing the opposite. And as time goes on, particularly, as you mentioned earlier, Tom, the Shia uprising in Najaf, even though Egypt is a Sunni country, you know, Sunni Muslims are responding to this and saying, yes, that's the right response. The response is to drive the invaders out of Arab lands. And I think that certainly if the Americans stay in Iraq, a long period, and of course that it hasn't been really determined how long the Americans will stay, I think that this will cause even more anti-American sentiment, because people have said, okay, the Americans got rid of Saddam Hussein, that's a good thing, now it's time for them to leave. And that's what I'm hearing across the region.
How much time, in your mind, do Americans have? Or is there some kind of balance here of the good they're seen to be doing and the time that's elapsing?
Well, people say, oh, they should only stay for a month or 2 months. One man said not longer than 24 hours. But of course, yes, it's a good point that you raise. If the Americans include Iraqis in the formation of a new government, if it seems that they're solving a lot of the problems with infrastructure, lack of water, lack of medical supplies, all these types of things, then, of course, that will change public opinion. I mean, I think the point is that when Arabs start seeing Iraqis on Al Jazeera television and Dubai television and their own television, when they start seeing Iraqis who seem happy, not suffering in hospitals, not without limbs, not completely maimed by the war.
And not in looted homes.
And not in looted homes, and not shouting against American soldiers. Once the image changes, then public opinion will change.
So there's the challenge. I'm talking tonight with Genevieve Abdo, Middle East correspondent for the Boston Globe, and Ali Salem, Egyptian playwright and writer for the magazine Rose El Youssef. They're both joining us from Cairo, sharing with us their sense of Arab thinking as everything unfolds in Iraq. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're joined tonight by two guests from Cairo, Egypt, Ali Salem, Egyptian playwright, and Genevieve Abdo, Middle East correspondent for the Boston Globe and longtime observer of the Arab world, getting a feeling from them of how the dramatic developments, events of the last 3 weeks, month, and more are being received in the Arab world. Washington is looking forward to a region ultimately transformed, a kind of a domino theory of political liberalism, of democracy and representative government, gradually, as a result of what's happened in Iraq, gradually coming to this entire region. There are fears that it could be something very different. Much, of course, depends on what happens in Iraq. Ali Salem, I read recently, again from Tom Friedman here, quoting a professor at Cairo University, Mohammed Kamel, you may know him, saying that if the American presence in Iraq backfires, if you don't deliver, it will have a really big impact, saying it will be very bad for those in the Arab world who would have supported political reform. Are you afraid of how much is at stake here this time? Are you afraid of what could happen if this goes wrong?
It has been already bad for liberals for not less than 50 years. Nothing more will happen. But the earth itself, actions on earth will determine what's going to happen. But we have to know that the Palestinian-Israeli conflict must be solved, And nowadays, the Apache proved that they are more convincing than a political diplomats.
The Apache helicopter, you mean?
Yes,
The gunships. What do you mean?
I mean that people have no time for everlasting talks and dialogues. People must immediately determine their goals and aims. And this is actually is happening in Palestine.
But we've seen lots of military armed conflict between Israelis and Palestinians that has not led to a solution.
Nowadays, there is a new prime minister, and he will be responsible. And I believe that he is a responsible man, a statesman, and I think he will be helpful for his people. It's also the remnants of the revolutionary thoughts, because we could achieve many things if you follow Oslo. But in a way, we couldn't preserve the Labour Party there in Israel. So the rights in Israel, the rights in our countries flourish. But I'm sure there is no way waiting for us but freedom. And this is the age of freedom.
Jenny, you're sitting with a man with a courageous optimism there tonight, and we want to hope that he's right. But how, in your view, well, do you share this kind of optimism? And can you imagine a scenario in which we have some dramatic breakthrough between Israelis and Palestinians, and in fact, we see something like the vision of region-wide change that has been described by some in Washington?
I certainly think the region is going to change, but I don't think it's going to change the way people in Washington think it will. For one thing, it is very clear, and Ali mentioned this at the beginning of our conversation, that even if some sort of pluralistic system comes to Egypt or Syria or all the countries that we're talking about, and there are elections, there aren't presidents who are just simply, you know, pass the position down to their sons. If there is some sort of pluralistic system here, it's not going to be Western-style democracy as we define it or as it's defined in Washington. And it's also not going to happen overnight. And I mean, certainly, you know, the kinds of rhetoric that's come out of the Bush administration when this whole campaign and the war in Iraq began, if you listen to them, it's a simple formula. You create democracy overnight, and then you create a model for democracy, and Iran follows, and Egypt follows, and then Syria. And I mean, that's just a completely unrealistic scenario, because every country is very, very different. The political dynamics in all these countries is very different. The role of religion in all these countries is very different.
But Ali Salem is saying, yes, true, but what's happened has rung a big bell here. Everyone's paying attention. Everyone's turning and looking, and it will have its effect.
Yes, everyone is looking, and people do see this as an opportunity to change their governments in some way or another. Gradually is generally the preference. And so different forces will try to take this opportunity to bring change from within. But as everyone has made the point to me over the last few weeks, they want to be the people who are driving this change. They do not want the United States government to do this, and they want to be able to characterize what kind of change occurs and to determine the type of change.
You know, if it happened once, the United States is not going to capture all the countries of the region, as some people saying here in Egypt. It happened.
You mean it happened in Iraq?
It happened. There is no Saddam. It happened. Actually.
But I think
so.
People...
But I would like to talk about optimism. Suppose 1 year and a half ago, somebody looked at the crystal ball telling you that Saddam will be no more in after one year and a half. Do you consider him an optimist, man?
It would have been it would have been hard to believe in many quarters there. I'm
lunatic.
Sure.
You will accuse him of being lunatic.
So what do you draw from that?
No one in history can predict exactly, but we can sense the direction of history in a place. A semi-liberal government in Baghdad would be of great support to liberalism inside Iran, and it will be support, really, in Egypt. Liberal intellectuals, the Iraqi liberal intellectuals and the artists, the Egyptian liberal intellectuals and the artists will cooperate to raise the standard of this region.
Let me ask you, do you imagine that kind of liberalism being at odds with, in opposition to, the very powerful Islamic movements that both you and Genève have referred to? Is it one or the other? Can the Middle East have both? Can it have Islamists in power and a kind of a political openness?
I promise you that all political Islamists will talk about liberalism from now on, because this is the most powerful thing in the minds of people.
You mean they'll talk about it and they'll actually seek to deliver on it if and when
they come
to power?
There is no way for them. They know very well that no one need them. And they know very well that people now are convinced that they haven't solutions to their real problems, but only words. You can't go forever promising people that this is the way to paradise. Nowadays, people are searching on earth. They want to make their tolerable hells on earth.
Jenny Hebdo, what I hear Ali Salem is describing, I must say, is in conflict with an awful lot of images that we see coming out of the Middle East, a lot of what we read. Help me out here.
Yes, I mean, with all due respect to Ali, I have to disagree. Because, again, we must distinguish between political Islam, which is violent, and moderate Islam, which is not violent. And I think that there's every reason to believe that some sort of new liberalism can coexist with moderate Islamists in the countries in the region. And I think that Turkey is a perfect example of this. Mm-hmm. And I was just spent a long time today with one of the leading moderate Islamists in Egypt, and Turkey is his model. So this is the model, I think, for many people for the future in this region. And they really believe that if they can be elected inside the government, if they have positions in the government, that they can bring about the kind of change that is positive and that is compatible with their culture and tradition. And I think that this is a point that gets lost in the discussion, which is that whatever changes occur in this part of the world, they have to also be compatible with the history of the region. And this is, again, why people are so opposed to the American invasion of Iraq, because they feel that an American presence is incompatible with the region.
Jenny, take our conversation just for a moment up off the Arab street, if you will, and into Arab halls of power. How do you imagine that this is all being observed in the authoritarian governments across the region? Can you imagine them voluntarily opening up to some more representative type of government? Might they, in fact, turn to reactionary forces to try and bolster their power against such a movement?
Yes, well, I think particularly in Egypt and Jordan, the governments now are in a real bind, because on the one hand, they're facing increasing pressure from the United States to change, to have some sort of reform process. On the other hand, they're facing growing opposition on the street. And so in these two countries, there have been completely conflicting reactions. There's been both an increase in sort of repressive tactics. For example, in Egypt, many people who demonstrated in these recent demonstrations against the war, some of them were put in jail, you know, for no reason. I mean, I just interviewed one of their lawyers, and he was saying that, you know, a lot of these people are still in jail. And so there has been repression. But then on the other hand, I've also, you know, been told that the Egyptian government now is allowing a special program on television. It will be aired on Saturday, which will openly discuss the war and the effects on the Arab world. Now, they've done this at the same time that there hasn't really been the newspapers were discouraged. The official state-owned newspapers were discouraged from any sort of anti-American, articles in the newspapers. Editors were told specifically, do not publish these stories, do not publish these editorials. So there's been a mixed reaction, and I think that certainly in the case of Egypt and Jordan, the governments don't know how to respond.
Well, what do they do, for example, when officials in Washington are quoted saying, we hope this will spark a democratic trend right across the Middle East? Do they let editors put that in the Egyptian newspapers?
Yes, they let the editors put that in the newspapers, but they also say, and certainly President Mubarak said this a few days ago, that the assumption is that there is already a sort of free system here. So he says, yes, I agree, the region should change, and we should certainly have a freer system. We should have a pluralistic, political system. But some of these leaders don't talk specifically about their own governments. They just generalize about what should happen in the region as a whole.
Ali Salem, these are governments with real power. How do you imagine them responding to everything that's going on? Can you see them opening to reform?
I would like to talk about a government like your government. We have wings in our government, and we have a liberal wing in our government. And this liberal wing, I think, was the cause of this new trend that don't insult the Americans all the time without any cause. This liberal wing is fighting, and I think will succeed in achieving liberalism economically and politically.
Ali Salem, we've just got a minute left, and I'm struck by, of all the voices we hear on this show, what an optimist you are, and how encouraged, in fact, you sound.
Optimism is my duty. It's my duty.
Well, so give us.
I'm a writer.
I can see. You're a playwright. We want to feel that vision tonight. Give us your vision. We've just got a minute left, but where do you see things going in this Arab world?
Tom, don't forget that Saddam in the last minutes played with the slogans of Islam. And this will drive people to reconsider, to rethink of the whole myth. The man in the last minutes tried to be a prophet. And he adopted, embraced the same slogans of Hamas and Muslim Brothers. And these things, nowadays people are awakening. Actually, they are. I'm sure.
Awakening to what?
To ask and not to deliver their necks to the others. Never to deliver their minds to the others. Now they are thinking critically. They are thinking nowadays. And when you read our columnists, you will find another pens, another writers.
Another view.
Another view, yes.
A view that we do not associate or have not associated with the Middle East for a long time. Ali Salem, I want to thank you for joining us tonight. You've got a courageous outpost for the sunny horizon there, and we can use a little bit of that. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
And Genevieve Abdo, always great to talk to you. Thanks for joining us on Point.
Thank you.
Genevieve Abdo is Boston Globe correspondent covering the Middle East. Her most recent book is Answering Only to God, Faith and Freedom in 21st Century Iran. And Ali Salem is an Egyptian playwright and a writer for the Egyptian magazine Rose El Yusuf. You can continue the conversation online. Go to onpointradio.org and click on Forums. On Point is produced by Meghna Chakrabarty, Eileen Amata, Virginia Prescott, John Roberts, James Ross, Keith Shields, Karen Schiffman, and Tim Skog. With help from Sabi Mir and John Hoder, our senior producer is Graham Griffith. Special thanks tonight to our friends at the BBC Cairo Production Center. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.